G'day and welcome to another episode of Sacred Cinema here on 2XX 98.3 FM People Powered Radio. I'm your host Jimmy Bernasconi for the next half hour, and this week's episode is entitled Monsters in the Forest. I'd imagine this is a fairly familiar idea for all of us, I suppose. We all grew up hearing stories of, you know, Hansel and Gretel and Cinderella, not so much Cinderella, so Sleeping Beauty and dragons and Grimm's fairy tales and things like little creatures hiding in the bushes and coming out of the big bad wolf and that sort of thing. So it's a pretty relatable idea. We're going to talk specifically about films. I guess they're from the last, 40 years. So in pretty recent history in terms of the very long history of human arts and culture and that sort of thing. But films in which you've got a monster of some kind who's lurking in the bushes in a forest or a jungle of some sort. And this is where we're going to discuss sort of how depictions of those kinds of monsters and the settings that they inhabit have sort of changed through the years as we talk about the different films, or how the different films from different eras depict these monsters differently and similarly in other respects. So the films we're going to be looking at, and you might be thinking there's a lot of films you could have done for this, and in prepping for this week's episode, a lot of films where I had to go on the chopping block, kind of picked these specific three because I thought there were some really interesting connections between some of them. But you might be thinking, Jimmy, I can't believe you missed out some classics. Maybe they're coming up next week. Maybe we're going to do a related week next week, relatively next week. You'll have to stick around next week to find out. First film we're going to talk about is John McTiernan's 1987 film Predator, starring Arnie Schwarzenegger, and then we're going to move on to Gareth Edwards, like his first big film. So he recently did something, recently did The Creator, which I haven't seen actually. We didn't do it on the show. But he did the Godzilla film and Rogue One and stuff like that. This was his sort of low budget crashing onto the scene film Monsters from 2010. And then we're going to finish off with Koreeda Hirokazu's new film from this year, and that would be Monster. So Predator, Monsters and Monster, the three films we're going to be looking at. So let's kick things off now with Mr. McTiernan's 1987 action blockbuster, Predator. So if you haven't seen this one, a bunch of commandos led by Arnie go into some rando Latin American jungle on a secret mission, and they realize that they're being hunted by the Predator. That ugly mother. Anyway, I want to talk about this one to kick things off. It's a classic sort of, I think it very much exploits some primordial insecurities in the human body and depicts the jungle, or what we might call, you know, the wild or the wilderness, as a place of danger. But nevertheless, it must be embraced rather than resisted. So let's unpack that first part. The jungle is a place of danger. Well, it certainly subverts that the modern paradigm we find ourselves in, where humans are, you know, apex predators. We don't have any predators anymore. And this is particularly effective, when we talk about this a lot on the show, where you have a main character, the person who's threatened, they are the best version of that thing. So you're in this sort of world of extremes, a world of archetypes, where this group of super buff commandos are the ones that have become the prey. So if they're prey, we're all prey to this thing. So if you build up your heroes and your villains are victorious, it makes them all the more stronger. I think it's probably worth mentioning as well that the fact that we are currently apex predators in the world, we can't forget the fact, and I think this is a really important thing for human beings to remember. This was not the case. I mean, I wasn't around in 10,000 BC, but from the little bits of research I've done, human beings haven't always been apex predators just in our ecosystems. There was a time in which we were hunted by saber-toothed cats and all sorts of predators, like that sort of thing. So it is in our DNA, or it's in our instincts, I should say, to actually feel a sense of insecurity about being hunted. That's something that we actually do have in our bones. And I think that does affect us. We hunted each other and we still do. So do I ever need to say that? You know, so I think that's why the film kind of works. And we feel a sense of angst and fear with this thing are running around and trying to get us. I think the other big part of this film and what makes this jungle setting look a little bit more scary is the fact that the predator himself is an alien. So there's this sort of presumption that he's more advanced and his capabilities are kind of unknown, and if he's come all the way from another planet, he must be pretty handy with his weapons. And he is equipped with all of these technologies and things like this. And I think you could actually read the film through a kind of existential lens if you really wanted to do so, where it's sort of in having this sort of microcosmic battle between man and this alien in jungle terrain, you could almost see that as symbolic of a larger arena where the jungle is sort of a microcosmic version of space or the universe as a whole, where we think of the universe as one big jungle, in that it is teeming with what we ought to consider predators, not necessarily space invaders either, but a sort of well, you might use a sort of H.P. Lovecraftian sense, which is that out there. And that's going to be a little bit more relevant for our next film, actually. A bit of a call to Cthulhu reference, I think, in the next film we're going to be talking about. But when you look out into the stars at night, into the black abyss, I mean, what the heck is out there? What lurks out there? What is potentially observing us? We have no idea. And I think the fact that the predator in this film is an alien kind of gives us a little tinge of reality, even though it's a fantasy film, a sci-fi film. It gives us this tinge of reality, which is that we are actually in the middle of a completely dark and desolate abyss, and we can't see what's out there. We don't know what's in our future. And so I think this is a little bit of a microcosmic depiction of that reality, honestly. So what's to be done for these characters? They're in this dense jungle that's inherently dangerous with this crazy alien guy trying to kill them. What do they do? Well, there's a really interesting motif of camouflage in this film. And it sort of is depicted as the means of maximum formidability in a way. Like he who can have the best camouflage, he who has the best camouflage wins in a way in this film. And it's interesting because it juxtaposes two different forms of camouflage. So there's the kind of the camouflage that you get from invisibility, and then there's the camouflage you get from like the classic, like the hunt is on, like putting the war paint, the mud all over your face. And it kind of does provoke the question, you know, which one is better? And so the invisibility is the one that the predator has. And so he runs around the like with the cloaking technology. He runs around the jungle with the cloaking technology. And we might call that sort of a technology-based camouflage or an art. Well, he's not artificial because he's not a man. He's not a human being. But we might call that sort of the artificial or the technology-based form of camouflage. And we should say sort of camouflage is you know, we talked before about, I mentioned at the beginning, this is sort of how the film depicts embracing the jungle. Camouflage, I guess we could say in a very crude and blunt sense, is a very apt depiction of embracing the jungle or becoming one with the jungle or becoming immersed in the jungle. But by having these two different forms of camouflage, it lifts up this question of, well, hang on, it's not simply just by being camouflaged. What does that actually mean to immerse oneself in nature, in the jungle and into nature? What does that actually, are there varying shades of that? Is there a good form of doing that and a bad form of doing that? So we've got the technology-based artificial one that the bad guy is doing, and then the good guy, Arnie, covers himself in mud, and that actually is not only like makes him hard to see with the naked eye. Like in the film, the predator has like heat mapping technology, and that keeps him from seeing him. So there's a very obvious obvious law in the film where by literally dunking oneself in the mud, in the earth itself, Arnie's able to sort of become a lot more formidable. And so there's a real, and we've talked about this a lot, whenever we talk about blockbusters, we kind of talk about how there's just a natural inherent lenience or privileging that human beings or directors or screenwriters give to a kind of salt of the earth type character versus a nerdy Poindexter egghead type character. So you've got the Predator, he's not so much an egghead, but he's got all these little whiz-bang gizmos and everything like that. And I feel like when I was watching this film, it kind of reminded me of, like, you know when that dentist went over to Africa and killed the lion or the elephant, everyone went crazy because he's this rich guy going. I feel like the Predator is like whatever planet he's from, he's like some high-flying finance guy. He's come just for sport. Like, it's not, anyway, I like to think that he's got lots of money on whatever planet he's on. But Arnie has this kind of salt of the earthness, much like you know, when we talked about Deep Blue Sea all those years ago, and it's the egghead scientist they get it wrong. They don't fully get it. And it's the ones that really understands the sharks and swims with the sharks. He understands them. And we get that in Armageddon as well, where there's the whole NASA thing. It's like, oh, this is the best that NASA can do. And Bruce Willis, because he's a man with the oil and he's there. He gets his hands dirty. He's the one we can trust. And so we get a bit of that from this with Arnie covering himself in the mud. So we get this sense of primitiveness or natural earthiness being the key to one's salvation in this place of danger. And if you think about it, and I've been watching a lot of animal videos recently on Instagram, because I do love watching animals, stuff like that. You see this in the animal kingdom all the time, where an animal that is ostensibly very vulnerable has some form of camouflage, or it's able to use its surroundings to its natural advantage. So for that animal, the jungle is both its enemy and its friend. It's a place of total anarchy, where it could be eaten by a tiger or something any minute, but it's also the means of its salvation. And if an animal was to resist the jungle simply because it's scary, it would get eaten in 5 seconds. And actually, even though the jungle itself is dangerous, it has to embrace it in order to avoid its dangers, which it has a paradoxical feel to it, but it is the truth, it seems. And it's almost like this film, it's almost like that is such an eternal truth that transcends planets, you might say. Because like whenever a character in the film kind of has this kind of adopts this kind of primitiveness or salt of the earthiness, like it's respected. So like when the tracker guy gets his dagger out and takes all his gear off, it's everyone in the audience are kind of like, yeah, man, he gets it. And when he dies like an honorable death. And then like Arnie goes to use the bow and arrows and things like that. And in the final showdown, the Predator takes off all his gear and all his technology so as to say like, no, let's do this the honorable way. Like there was a privileging all of a sudden of doing things with your hands and getting down and dirty and that sort of thing. And I think you could almost make a broad assumption here, and also I think what's really worth mentioning as well is that there's this huge emphasis on the firepower of the commanders at the beginning of the film. Like there's a shot where they literally just fire all their guns in the same direction, and it's obscene. Like it's just like constant, and I think that that's deliberately put in there to be juxtaposed against what happens at the end where Arnie's using the bow and arrow and everything like that. So I think you could actually go as far as to say this is a very 1980s film, where it's sort of almost in response to an increasingly technology-based, industry-based society. And it's kind of like almost like an implicit resistance against polluting the natural, where literally an alien, so like an outsider, has a predatorial relationship with Earth. Or with Earth's natural realm, with the jungle, and the fate of the human, the only way for the human to survive is to immerse himself in nature and resist such things. It's kind of got like a decolonial vibe, the alien coming to the natural realm and then using whiz-bang gizmos and that sort of thing is the baddie, and he who can become one with nature is the one that is able to prevail in the end. So we've got this interesting depiction of nature there, where it is dangerous, but it's something to be respected. And despite the fact that it's populated with monsters, it still needs to be embraced, and so those monsters can be fought. But is it always the case that the jungle and the monsters that populate it are inherently dangerous? Well, before we move on to our next film, let's just remind you, dear listener, that you are listening to 2XX 98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. I'm your host, Jim Bernasconi, for the next half hour. Or for the remainder of this half-hour slot. And please stay tuned for more quality radio programming here on 2XX. And also consider jumping onto our website to subscribe to the station or sponsor any of our shows here at 2XX. But moving on now to Monsters by Mr. Gareth Edwards. And this one, I mean, I really didn't know anything about this film till I was prepping for this week. And I thought it was quite relevant to talk about, because I think it links Predator and the next film we're going to talk about, Monster, really beautifully. So much like how Predator, an alien comes to Earth and fights everyone. In this film, it begins with some aliens have fallen to Earth through like a NASA botch job or something, and they essentially populate what's called the infected zone, which on a map is basically Mexico and a couple of the other countries south of Mexico, pretty much all the countries between Mexico and Costa Rica, basically. And that's called the infected zone. And there's this journalist, and he gets asked by his boss to what's that called when you chaperone? He chaperones his boss's daughter to get back to America. And I'll spare the details. As you guessed it, they have to go through the infected zone to get there. Now, I think this film, there's two levels to look at this film. I think ultimately sort of the main kind of takeaway, I think, from this film that I think is relevant to this week's episode is it kind of depicts this infected zone or the jungle as a false filter, specifically of the other. So the jungle kind of obfuscates our view of the other, of the alien. So I think it does that on two levels. The first level is the obvious one, which is that in having these white Americans coming through the infected zone to get back into America, you've got a subversion of the typical South US-Mexico border story. So it's almost like a serious version of that sequence in Fun with Dick and Jane, the Sierra Leone and Jim Carrey film. Like it's with, you know, there's a little bit of a like, what, how would you like it? You know, you, and in the end, it sort of plays into the old school idea of if you want to sort of, if you want to humanize people who have to do that and do try and jump the border from Mexico into the USA, you have to do it through empathy. It's very pre-2016 way of doing it, I suppose. You know, it's very politically incorrect these days to sort of analogize things to one's own experience in order to see them as bad. That's like the norm now, to be like, imagine if this was your daughter or something. That's like, oh, you should just care because you're a human. This is back in the day when it was okay to kind of be like, well, what if it was happening to you? And that was sort of like a way that we talked about social issues. But there's another level to this, and I think it's the sort of the one that's going to get more of a focus in today's conversation, is that it says, look, I'll give you monsters, right? Let's even say that these the creatures that inhabit this volatile part of the world are literally monsters. There's still work to be done by those in power. That doesn't change things. And I think that's a smart way to tell this story rather than just having, like, I think the inclusion of the monster aspect of it is a smart way of doing it, because I think if you just have a movie where it's just a couple of white Americans living the immigrant story and then being like, well, now we should care, it doesn't get to the heart of the problem, which is that in the world there are monsters, right? There are people do monstrous things all the time. The film itself is called Monsters because there's sort of like an implicit implication that, you know, well, who are the monsters here? Like, we know that there are monstrous people in the world. There's a huge list of them. We all do monstrous things all the time. I think what the film is kind of saying that despite our monstrosities, there is still something to be done, right? And so, again, you know, the monsters in this film that are lurking in this jungle are aliens. So, again, there's this natural sense of suspicion and fear, right? We don't know where they're from. And this is kind of where the Lovecraftian imagery of the tentacles and stuff, it's got a bit of a Call of Cthulhu vibe, which is definitely something that a film like Arrival does as well, and maybe a little bit more prominently. But I think it's kind of fair that we're a little bit scared of these giant octopus things that are walking around the forest. Like, what are they going to do? We don't know what they're about. We don't know what they're here for or what they're capable of doing. So, like, that natural suspicion, I think, you know, it kind of steelmans this issue a little bit to say, well, you know, we can't just let monsters roam free in the world unless we know what's going on first. But the film doesn't depict it in the same way as Predator, which is, you know, alien equals bad, let's shoot them and let's burn them and kill them. There's a really beautiful, what I think is a really beautiful scene at the end of the film. And if you haven't seen it, maybe tune out if you're going to watch it. But I think the end of this, the film really ties it together so beautifully, where I'll kind of be vague in how I explain it, but the aliens in this film are kind of, they're an energy-sharing species or a resource-sharing species, and that's how they enact love, is in how they distribute energy. And I guess what you could say is that ultimately the whole issue of this keeping them out of, you know, sovereign borders and keeping things and ultimately people out, that whole issue kind of boils down to the fact that humans aren't innately social and communal people. No matter sort of where you fall on the political spectrum, everyone loves someone and wants to share their food at the dinner table or, you know, give in massive acts of philanthropy. Well, we are naturally social and communal people. And we enjoy sharing and caring for our people we care for and caring for each other. And the fact that there are impediments to that is in and of itself a problem. The fact that there are people that aren't content with how that's going on in the world should be a cause of concern, no matter how monstrous they might be in certain respects, no matter who you are, no matter what part of the world you're from, gender, color, whatever. the fact that people aren't able to share things that other people need is a problem. We need to fix it somehow. And like the film doesn't, again, just talking about the monstrosity aspect of it, like the monsters do kill people in the film. Like it's not like it's saying that, oh, sharing is caring, let's all hold hands. It's like it doesn't really matter that they are aggressive when fought against. Like we should still have a sense of empathy towards anyone, no matter how monstrous they might be. We should be trying to make sure, because ultimately it's actually in being able to redistribute things in an effective way that is going to lead to a more peaceful world. And so the film kind of ultimately depicts this concept of sharing resources as an act of love, right? As a natural or instinctual or almost like a reproductive form of love, which I think kind of transcends sort of traditional ideas around how sort of we might otherwise look at things like immigration, that sort of thing. So we've got two films here that are a little bit conflicting, where you've got one where there's these monstrous aliens that lurk in the jungle and we need to fight them and stick in the jungle and kill them. And then there's another film here that sort of says something similar, but it subverts this idea of the aliens or these monstrous aliens lurking in the jungle as being bad. By the end of the film, we kind of realize we come to empathize with their condition. So has cinema been able to reconcile these ideas or move the conversation forward in any way recently? Well, let's finish off now with Kōra Ida Hirokazu's new film Monster, and it's just come out, at least just come out here, and it's based around, well, it's a very hard film to it's difficult to sort of explain what actually happens in the film without giving too much away. But to put it simply, basically we start off with a mother who's being brought into a school because her son may or may not be causing a bit of trouble, and he was hit by a teacher for maybe not bullying another student. And we talked about with monsters, we talked about how the sort of the jungle is symbolic of an obfuscation of the other. I think this film goes a bit further to say that the forest is an obfuscation of truth at large. And so, or reality itself is like a forest in how it obfuscates truth at large in a way. So the film is a very sort of Rashomon, The Last Duel kind of vibe, where our understanding of the characters is sort of dependent on the perspective we get. So we sort of jump around between all of the main characters in the film and we learn something new about it. But as opposed to something like Rashomon or Last Duel, where you're like, now I don't know what to believe, it all depends on who I hear it from, like that kind of postmodern kind of thing, I think this film is almost saying the complete opposite, which is saying that, no, it's the more that you hear from different conflicting perspectives, the more that you can add to the actual, you actually add to the same tapestry. It's not that you get three different tapestries, but you get the same tapestry that becomes more comprehensive the more perspectives you get on it. And they don't actually conflict each other. What is conflicted is our perceptions ourselves and our assumptions. The information is actually all very, it all matches. It's just that our presumption from hearing one side of the story is conflicted. And it's a very, very fantastically written film. There's not many films, I think, that could rival it in terms of how it subverts where your mind is going throughout the film. I don't want to give too much away either, but I think this is best depicted in how this film depicts its, conveyed in how it depicts the forest in the film and what those who are inhabiting it, sort of what they're getting up to when they're there and how we understand them as characters while they're there and what they're doing. So at the beginning, the forest and the scenes that are in the forest are kind of almost like horror-like, or they're quite disconcerting. And we kind of don't know what the little boy who's heading out there in the middle of the night in the, you know, going through the sewers, and so we don't really know what he's up to, and it's kind of a bit disconcerting, and we feel like he's sort of gone down a bad road. And there's even some dialogue as the film progresses, which is to say that we have a scene specifically where there's almost like a Bridge to Terabithia element to this film, but there's a scene where there's a tunnel and there's sort of a movement through darkness, and the protagonist is sort of confronted with going through the darkness, and that's essentially what we're doing through this film, because gradually the forest does become something else entirely for the characters, and as that changes, they change as well. And the depiction of the forest itself actually, I guess the way that it transforms, it almost transcends, or it almost transforms and becomes interdimensional in a sense, right up to the last shot. If you do go and see this film without giving too much away. And so in having this motif of this enigmatic forest and the, sort of the enigmatic nature of the people that inhabit it and sort of go there for whatever reason, I think that almost serves as a really nice symbol for what's happening in the film at large or what's happening in reality at large, in that sort of naivety or lies are sort of the leaves that obfuscate us from seeing the real thing, what's actually going on behind the bushes, the wood through the trees, so to speak. And so in order to sort of get to a place of clarity and peace, we kind of need to delve into that jungle. So it does have that same sense that Predator has of you actually need to go and embrace the forest. You need to go into the darkness to get there. But it's in doing that that we actually find out that those that we feared perhaps weren't as, well, maybe we didn't actually need to fear them that much. So it kind of builds on what Monsters was saying, which was kind of saying, like, you know, immigrants are not monsters simply just because they need resources. I think Monsters taking the next step forward, which is saying that it's not just people. So it's not just the other, but it's people in general. Us ourselves, those we love, the more that we delve into the darkness of society, the more that we can be willing to undo our own naivety, to turn the lies around, the more we listen to more perspectives, the more human everyone will become. Everyone will become. We'll become more human to our enemies, and enemies will become more human to us. And I could not stop thinking when I was watching this film about pretty much every political issue involving the dehumanization of any group of people, be they the good side of history or the bad side of history. It always comes that the more history you learn, the more perspectives you learn, the more well-rounded any given topic becomes. And it does humanize everyone. And it sometimes it makes things more complex, but it also makes things a little bit more clear. We avoid seeing the monstrosity in people in general. And I think that's why it goes a bit further than Monsters, which is just sort of saying, like, you thought those people were monsters, they're not actually monsters. I think this film is almost saying no one is a monster, right? The more that you learn about the world, the more perspective you get, the more that you can see that, the more clarity you have. So to recap sort of what we've talked about, in Predator we talked about how the jungle and the wild and the world at large, I suppose, is a dangerous place, yet it's a horror worth embracing, and it's a horror we need to embrace in order to avoid its actual dangers. There's a paradox in that. And then in Monsters we sort of said that actually in stepping into that dark place and doing that, those enemies that we originally thought maybe were a little bit dangerous or were a bit threatening actually aren't. They might have a monstrous edge to them, like all human beings do. We all have a capacity for violence given the situation. But at our core, we're social creatures that just want to exchange resources for our own safety. And then in Monster, it's sort of saying that it's not only that the other can be humanized through sort of delving into the darkness of the forest, but everything can become a bit more clear when we push away the leaves of lies and naivety. If we, the more perspectives we gain, the clearer the picture gets at large. So where do we go from here? Where do we think that the cinema will go in this area looking forward? I feel like there may be an inherent complacency there in thinking that all perceived dangers are simply misunderstood, because, you know, maybe there are actual predators out there. You know, there are animals in the world that go after other animals and rip their heads off and eat them. And is that the case? You know, what if we were to explore other planets and go out into the world or confront, you know, maybe you are a person that's had an experience with someone that you really do consider innately two-dimensionally evil. Or can we rely on this idea that the fear we experience toward what lurks in the forest, what lurks in the darkness, is simply just a matter of clearing our view? That's all we've got time for this week on Sacred Cinema. I've been your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, here on 2XX 98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. Stay tuned for more quality radio programming here on 2XX, and consider jumping onto our website if you're not there already to subscribe to the station or sponsor the show. It's been a pleasure having you again here on Sacred Cinema. Please get in contact with me at contact@jimmybernasconi.com, and I will see you again next week.